Usually when we picture a machine as sophisticated as a modern luxury car, there's like this expectation of just absolute flawless precision.
Oh, right. Yeah,
You know,
exactly.
you naturally think of a sterile, brightly lit German factory. You've got robotic arms assembling components down to the micrometer, perfectly calibrated sensors, and this onboard computer that just intrinsically knows everything happening inside the vehicle.
Right. It feels like it should be binary. Like you turn the key and it just works.
Exactly.
And, you know, that expectation of predictability is incredibly comforting for a driver. I mean, we like to believe that if we buy a premium product and we just follow the factory manual to the letter, the machine will remain in this, I don't know, this state of suspended animation.
Yeah.
But that sterile precision is, well, it's based on an assumption of a perfectly controlled environment.
Which is not reality. Because
Yeah.
then you take that pristine, factory-perfect machine and you drop it into the messy, chaotic, just relentlessly hot reality of like a Texas summer.
Right. It's a completely different world.
And suddenly, all that brilliant German engineering is fighting a war it wasn't really strictly programmed for. And that collision between precision data and brutal physical reality is exactly what we are deep diving into today.
Yeah, it's a fascinating dynamic.
We're pulling directly from this incredibly detailed service guide published by Autoscope. They're a European auto repair shop that's been operating out of Dallas and Plano since 1982.
A long time.
Yeah, and they wrote this whole dossier specifically on maintaining the BMW 330i. And honestly, what they reveal just completely shatters the idea that you can wait for a dashboard light to tell you how to care for your car. I mean, owning a high-performance machine requires localized context.
Yeah, and what we're really talking about today is the difference between data, you know, what the car's computer says, and reality, which is what the car is actually experiencing on the ground.
Right.
The central conflict here is that massive delta. The factory service indicator, that little computerized brain on your dashboard, is essentially driving blind to the local climate.
Oh, totally.
I mean, it calculates your mileage, it monitors fuel consumption, logs how many times you fire up the engine, but it has absolutely no sensory input to feel the ambient heat radiating off a concrete highway in Dallas at like 3 in the afternoon.
Okay, let's unpack this for a second. Because treating a car in a sweltering Texas summer the exact same way you'd treat it in mild temperate Bavaria, just, it defies basic logic.
It really does.
It's like wearing a heavy winter parka in a sauna and wondering why your body is suddenly shutting down, you know?
That is a perfect analogy.
So if the factory service indicator doesn't know it's in Dallas, how much is the driver missing? Like, what is that extreme heat actually doing to the physical components under the hood?
What's fascinating here is that a maintenance plan based only on dashboard reminders is fundamentally flawed. Because high ambient heat accelerates the chemical aging process of almost every non-metal material in the engine bay.
Wow, okay. Every non-metal material.
Basically, yeah. Modern European cars utilize a vast amount of engineered plastics and rubber composites, mostly for weight savings and efficiency.
Right.
So when these materials are subjected to a sustained 100-plus degree Texas summer, and that's compounded by the internal heat of a running engine, the polymers actually begin to break down and outgas.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, the plastics that make up your cooling system components, they lose their structural integrity, they become incredibly brittle, and the rubber gaskets and seals, which are supposed to remain nice and pliable to keep high-pressure fluids inside the engine, they literally bake.
They just cook in there.
Exactly. They harden, they lose their elasticity, and they shrink.
So the engine is basically aging in dog years just by sitting in traffic,
Basically, yeah.
which actually brings up another major environmental factor the Autoscope guide hammered on, which is the traffic itself. I mean, Dallas is notorious for stop-and-go commuting on the tollways, and I always knew traffic was bad for gas mileage, but this guide treats it like a literal structural threat to the vehicle.
Oh, it absolutely is. Stop-and-go traffic is one of the most violent things you can do to a heavy, high-performance vehicle.
Wait, really? Violent.
Yeah, think about the physics involved.
Oh.
You are taking a roughly 3,500-pound machine, you're accelerating it, and then abruptly forcing the braking system to convert all of that kinetic energy into thermal energy.
Right, heat.
Right. And in heavy traffic, you are doing this over and over and over again without any sustained airflow to cool the components down. So the brake pads and rotors get scorching hot, then you inch forward and they cool by maybe a fraction of a degree,
Barely
and
anything.
then you slam them again, spiking the heat even higher. This intense, rapid heat cycling changes the friction material's properties over time.
Wow.
And it isn't just the brakes either. The coolant system is working at absolute maximum capacity, trying to shed engine heat without any ram air coming through the front grille.
Okay, but what if I'm like the opposite kind of driver? Let's say I work from home, right? I avoid the highway completely. I just take my 330i on really short trips around the neighborhood, running to the grocery store, maybe dropping the kids at school 5 minutes away. I mean, that sounds incredibly gentle on the hardware.
And that assumption is exactly what gets a lot of luxury car owners into real trouble.
Really?
Yeah. Short local trips are deceptively destructive. When you only drive for 5 or 10 minutes, the engine oil never reaches its full operating temperature, and it needs to exceed 212 degrees Fahrenheit.
Which is the boiling point of water.
Exactly.
Wait, why does the oil need to boil water?
Because every time an engine cools down overnight, condensation naturally forms inside the cold metal crankcase.
Oh, I didn't even think about that.
Yeah, it's just physics.
Yeah.
So if you don't drive long enough for the oil to get hot enough to vaporize that moisture so the PCV system can pull it out, that water just stays mixed with your oil.
Yuck.
Right. And over time, it whips into this corrosive sludge that completely degrades the oil's ability to lubricate.
That is wild.
And furthermore, simply starting the engine requires a massive surge of amperage from the battery. So when you only drive a couple of miles at low speeds, the alternator simply does not have enough time or rotational speed to push that electrical charge back into the battery.
Ah, so you're just draining it.
Yes. You are slowly draining the battery's reserve capacity to death, literally trip by short trip.
And as that battery drains, the electrical voltage to the car's computer drops, which I imagine can trigger all sorts of bizarre sensor warnings.
Oh, absolutely. It creates chaos.
And, you know, we are so heavily conditioned to trust screens these days. Like, if a check engine light comes on, my immediate thought is, okay, the car knows exactly what is broken. But if the environment is constantly attacking the car in ways the factory algorithms didn't fully program for, trusting the dashboard just feels like, I don't know, a diagnostic illusion.
The diagnostic illusion captures the problem perfectly.
Mm-hmm.
The dashboard light is really just designed to give you a false sense of certainty.
Yeah.
The limitations of the car's own brain become glaringly obvious when you actually understand the architecture of a modern vehicle. I mean, a BMW 330i isn't controlled by one central computer.
It's not.
No. It is a highly complex optical and electrical network of dozens of individual control modules, and they are all constantly talking to each other. Okay, I have to confess something here. Whenever a warning light pops up on my dashboard, my first instinct is to just drive to a generic auto parts store.
Oh, boy.
I know. But they always have that big sign in the window offering free code scanning, right?
Yeah.
So they plug a little handheld device under the steering wheel. It spits out a code. The guy tells me I need like a mass airflow sensor. I buy the sensor and I swap it out. Wait, why can't I just go to a generic auto parts store, get a free scan, and buy the part it tells me to for a machine like this?
Well, relying on a generic scanner for a modern European network is like trying to read a novel where someone has ripped out every single chapter except the table of contents.
Oh, wow. That bad.
It is. Those free scanners at parts stores are only designed to interface with basic, federally mandated OBD2 emissions protocols.
Right, the standard stuff.
Right. They can see generic powertrain faults, but they are completely blind to manufacturer-specific module-to-module communication faults. You absolutely require proprietary BMW-specific software to see the entire optical network and understand where the data flow is actually breaking down.
So you're basically flying blind with the generic tool.
Completely blind. And fault codes only identify where abnormal data was detected. They do not tell you the root cause.
Yeah, even if you manage to pull the correct code with the right software, the Autoscope Guide talks heavily about symptom overlap.
Yes, symptom overlap is huge.
So the code itself is really just a starting line, right? Like going to a doctor with a severe headache, I mean, it could be a simple dehydration or it could be a brain tumor. The symptom alone doesn't give you the treatment plan.
Exactly. Let's say your check engine light illuminates and the factory software pulls a code for a misfire in cylinder 3. The generic approach assumes you just need a new spark plug, right?
Yeah, that's what I would think.
But a misfire simply means combustion didn't happen correctly. That could be a failing ignition coil. It could be an injector spraying the wrong fuel mixture. It could be a failure in the turbocharger's boost pressure, or even a microscopic vacuum leak in a plastic intake manifold that's letting unmetered air into the engine.
So if the computer can't tell you the actual root cause, how does a professional figure it out without just throwing parts at the car and hoping the light stays off.
Well, a qualified technician starts by pulling the code, sure, but then they immediately look at the freeze frame data.
What is that?
It's a snapshot taken by the computer at the exact millisecond the fault occurred. It shows the engine load, the ambient temperature, the vehicle speed, the throttle position.
It's all the context.
All the context. And then they have to physically test the hardware.
Okay.
This means running a smoke machine through the intake system to visually expose hidden microscopic vacuum leaks. It means pressure testing the cooling system. Because the core philosophy of a true diagnostic professional is that the goal is never to just temporarily clear a warning light from a screen.
Yeah.
The goal is to prove, through physical testing, the exact mechanical or software failure, permanently correct it, and ensure it never comes back.
Here's where it gets really interesting, though. Because this is the part of the guide that actually blew my mind. Once you finally have that accurate diagnosis, you have to decide whether or not to spend the money to fix it.
Right.
And if you ignore it, the guide describes this absolute nightmare scenario where a minor localized issue cascades into total engine failure. So we really need to talk about the beating heart of the 330i, which is that turbocharged engine.
Yeah, we do. Because turbocharging is a brilliant engineering solution to extract massive power out of a smaller, lighter, more fuel-efficient engine block.
Which is great for performance.
It is, but that density of power comes at a steep cost. Turbochargers are physically spun by the extremely hot exhaust gases leaving the engine. So this means they operate under intense thermal stress and incredibly high rotational speeds compared to, like, a traditional naturally aspirated engine. And because the operating parameters are so extreme, the margins for error regarding lubrication and cooling are basically non-existent.
Okay, let's talk about lubrication then, specifically oil leaks. Because I think the average driver sees a few drops of oil on their driveway, and they just rationalize it. They think, oh, it's an older car. It marks its territory. I'll just check the dipstick and top it off.
Oh, yeah. People do that all the time.
Right. But the Autoscope guide makes it very clear that an oil leak is never just cosmetic.
Which is wild to me, because I always assumed the only real danger of a leak was simply running out of oil.
Well, that is a dangerous misunderstanding of what engine oil actually is.
Really?
Yeah. Engine oil is a highly refined petroleum-based chemical. So an oil leak isn't just a stain on your driveway. It's like a slow-moving poison creeping toward the engine's vital organs.
Wow, poison.
Yeah, it's a highly destructive solvent. When oil seeps from a failing valve cover gasket or, say, a cracked plastic oil filter housing, it doesn't just drip straight down onto the pavement.
Because you're moving. Exactly. As you drive at 60 miles an hour, wind resistance aerosolizes that oil and spreads it backwards across the entire engine bay.
It coats everything.
It coats everything. And when petroleum-based oil makes sustained contact with silicone coolant hoses or rubber drive belts, a chemical reaction occurs.
Oh, no.
The hose absorbs the oil like a sponge. It causes the structural fibers of the silicone to swell, soften, and dramatically weaken.
So it's literally eating the hose.
Yes. So suddenly, a hose that was rated to hold back 20 pounds of pressurized boiling coolant just bursts open on the highway. And furthermore, if that oil seeps into the wiring harness and saturates the electrical connectors, it alters the electrical resistance, which causes completely phantom communication faults across the car's network.
So wait, a $50 gasket leak ruins a $300 coolant hose, which then drains the cooling system, which brings us right back to that vicious Dallas heat.
Exactly. The cooling system in a turbocharged vehicle is the only line of defense preventing the aluminum engine block from structurally melting.
Well,
yeah. The system operates under pressure because pressurizing a fluid raises its boiling point.
Okay.
So in high ambient temperatures, if you get a low coolant warning, simply pouring more fluid into the plastic reservoir is incredibly reckless if you haven't identified where the missing fluid escaped.
Because if the fluid is leaving, the pressure is...
Exactly. The pressure is leaving with it.
Yeah.
A hairline crack in a plastic expansion tank or a degraded hose fitting might only open up and leak when the engine is completely heat-soaked and fully pressurized.
So you might not even see it leaking in the driveway.
Right. And if you ignore that pressure leak, the coolant inside the engine block begins to locally boil. It turns into steam.
And steam doesn't cool anything.
No. Steam pockets cannot absorb heat.
Mm.
So the temperature of the aluminum cylinder head skyrockets. The metal physically warps and the engine loses compression. What began as a tiny, inexpensive plastic leak cascades into profoundly expensive, catastrophic internal engine damage.
Yeah, and a small drop in oil pressure due to a minor leak also directly starves that turbocharger.
Right.
Because those internal bearings are spinning at tens of thousands of RPMs, and they literally float on a microscopic film of pressurized oil. So one ignored symptom, like a rough idle, or a faint sweet smell of burning coolant coming through the AC vents, or even just a temperature gauge creeping just past the center market, triggers a massive domino effect.
You cannot separate these systems. Like, the variable valve timing system uses that exact same oil pressure to physically advance or retard the engine timing for performance. If the pressure drops, the timing lags, the engine misfires, the unburned fuel destroys the catalytic converter. I mean, it is a completely interconnected ecosystem.
Okay, let's assume the listener is incredibly diligent, all right? They don't ignore leaks, the engine is perfectly healthy, and the car runs great. There is still a much more insidious, subtle danger the sources highlight. Mm. Because the reason you buy a luxury European sedan in the first place is the actual driver experience.
Right, the feel of the car.
Yeah. If the car hasn't technically broken down, but it drives horribly, your premium investment is essentially wasted. You're losing that famous BMW feel.
Oh, completely. A massive portion of the sticker price for a German luxury car goes directly into the tactile feedback engineering.
Like what?
It's the heavy, precise way the steering weights up as you enter a corner. It's the rock-solid stability at 80 miles an hour. It's the specific acoustic thud when the suspension absorbs a pothole without transferring that shock into the cabin.
But the guide points out how incredibly fragile that tactile feel really is. Take the brakes, for example. I was always taught that if the steering wheel violently shakes when I apply the brakes on the highway, it meant I'd overheated and physically warped the metal brake rotors.
Yeah, that's a huge misconception. Rotors actually don't warp nearly as often as people think.
They don't.
No, it takes an immense amount of sheet to structurally bend cast iron. What you're almost always feeling is called uneven pad material transfer.
What is that?
Well, remember that heavy stop-and-go traffic we discussed? If you brake aggressively from highway speeds, getting the pads scorching hot, and then you come to a complete stop and just sit there with your foot firmly clamped on the brake pedal, the intense heat literally bakes a microscopic layer of the brake pad material directly onto that specific spot on the metal rotor.
You're leaving a physical imprint on the metal.
You are literally bonding friction material to iron. And over months of driving, that creates a high spot on the rotor surface.
Oh, I see.
So when the brake pad hits that high spot at 60 miles an hour, it causes severe rapid vibration through the steering column. And that vibration can also originate from completely different areas, like a wheel imbalance or degrading rubber in the suspension.
Right. And the guide lists symptoms of suspension failure, like clunking over speed bumps or the car wandering across the lane at highway speeds, or just a generally loose, sloppy front end feel. But because this deterioration happens so incredibly slowly, like over thousands of miles of hitting uneven roads, it's like having the volume on your TV turned up one single notch every day. You don't realize you're being deafened until someone else walks into the room. Because this deterioration happens so gradually, do drivers even realize they've lost that premium BMW feel until it's gone?
They rarely notice it happening. If we connect this to the bigger picture, you actually subconsciously adjust your own driving mechanics to compensate for the degradation.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. The heavy rubber control arm bushings soften by maybe a fraction of a percent every week. The hydraulic fluid in the dampers slowly loses its viscosity. So without even thinking about it, you grip the steering wheel a little tighter on the highway to keep it tracking straight.
Or you brake earlier.
Right. You apply the brakes 50 feet earlier because the car is diving forward more than it used to.
So you just accept the sloppy handling as normal?
You completely normalize the failure. A car with worn bushings and tired struts will technically still pass a safety inspection, you know, and get you to work, but it fundamentally ceases to be a performance vehicle. It becomes a completely numb commuter car.
Which defeats the purpose of owning it.
Exactly. You lose the precision. This is why a driver has to actively calibrate themselves to the car. You have to intentionally pay attention to the introduction of new road noise, or notice if the steering wheel suddenly requires 2 degrees of input before the tires actually respond.
So you're losing that BMW feel day by day without noticing. But the moment you finally DO notice, or a massive warning light does pop up, you're faced with an entirely new problem.
The repair bill.
Right. Who do you actually trust to fix it without completely draining your bank account? The guide draws a very clear line between when you should go to the dealership and when you need an independent specialist.
Yeah, there are highly specific scenarios where the dealership is your only logical option.
Like what?
Well, if you have a factory-covered warranty defect, you absolutely utilize the dealership. If there is a manufacturer safety recall campaign where they are legally required to provide the remedy, that goes to the dealer. And certain brand new vehicle configuration resets or proprietary over-the-air software updates, they require a direct link to the manufacturer's corporate servers in Germany.
But the moment that factory warranty expires, the math completely changes.
Completely. Once the vehicle is out of warranty, an independent European specialist-like Autoscope often becomes the much stronger financial and mechanical choice.
Why is that?
Because dealerships are inherently bound by very rigid corporate service structures and quotas. A specialized independent shop is focused purely on post-warranty ownership. They provide personalized, inspection-based planning rather than just aggressively pushing a standard corporate service menu.
So what does this all mean? Because I hear this all the time from people who avoid European cars entirely. They say, if you can't afford a brand new BMW, you definitely can't afford the repairs on a used one. Isn't it just inherently expensive to fix a luxury car?
This raises an important question about how costs are actually calculated. The parts and specialized labor will always carry a premium over, say, a standard economy car. But the catastrophic costs that terrify people usually stem from how a shop diagnoses the car, not the parts themselves.
Ah, back to the diagnostics.
Exactly. Let's say two identical 330s roll into a shop with the exact same check engine light for a lean fuel mixture.
Okay.
One shop fires the parts cannon and quotes a $2,000 electronic control unit replacement because the generic scanner suggested it.
Ouch.
Right. But a specialized shop runs a smoke test, finds a tiny crack in a $50 plastic vacuum hose, and fixes the actual root cause.
Yeah. So the accuracy of the estimate has to match the physical reality of the engine.
A credible estimate is derived from a confirmed, physically tested cause, not a symptom guess. The guide points out several massive red flags you have to watch out for.
Like what?
Well, if a shop quotes you a repair price while you're standing at the front desk before they've even put the car on a load to run physical diagnostics, you need to walk away immediately.
Because they're just guessing.
They are guessing with your money. Another red flag is clearing fault codes without diagnosing the underlying cause, or pressuring a driver to execute every single suggested maintenance item in one massive, expensive visit.
Right.
A trustworthy, independent mechanic operates much more like a financial advisor for your vehicle.
I love that comparison.
Yeah, they assess the entire health of the car, they separate the critical safety issues from the minor preventative wear, and they help you build a timeline that protects the vehicle's integrity without bankrupting you.
It really is a comprehensive ecosystem.
Yeah.
We started by realizing that the environment, the brutal Dallas heat and stop-and-go traffic, dictates the degradation of materials far more than a factory algorithm can ever account for.
Exactly.
We learned that accurate diagnostics require human interpretation of complex network data to prevent endless symptom chasing. We saw how ignoring root causes, like how a tiny petroleum leak destroys silicone hoses, creates a catastrophic domino effect for a turbocharged engine. And ultimately, choosing the right mechanic isn't just about fixing broken parts. It's an exercise in long-term economic planning.
It all comes back to the danger of the diagnostic illusion. A machine as incredibly sophisticated as a modern BMW is completely blind to its own reality without a human expert interpreting the local physical context. It needs us to look past the dashboard.
Right.
Which leads to a fascinating question about how we operate in our own lives, you know?
What do you mean?
Well, we are increasingly surrounded by automated digital dashboards. Our smartwatches tell us about our sleep quality and our heart rate. Our financial algorithms send us notifications about our spending habits.
Oh, I see where you're going with this.
Are we blindly trusting these digital warning lights while completely ignoring the physical Dallas heat of our own real-world context? Are we just treating the symptoms on the screen while completely missing the root cause of what's actually happening around us?
Wow. Yeah, an app might tell you your heart rate is elevated, but it doesn't tell you how to navigate the actual stress causing it. You're usually going to step out from behind the screen, look at the physical world, and run your own diagnostics.
Yeah.
That is a great place to leave it. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. Keep questioning the information in front of you. Don't ignore the warning signs. And we will catch you on the next one.